This is Mark Steiner, and it's good to have you all with us today, as usual. And in this segment of our show, we're about to talk with Jarvis Tyner, who's going to be coming to Baltimore. Jarvis is the Executive Vice Chair of the Communist Party USA, longtime member of the party's national board. He's founding member of the Black Radical Congress. He's a friend and comrade of Angela Davis. And he's with us to talk about the movie Free Angela and All the Political Prisoners, which we'll be introducing tonight, November 14th, at MICA. The event starts at 7 p.m. in the Graduate Student Center. That's at 13 West North Avenue. And you can get front of our tickets now. You can see the movie with the student ID at freeangela.eventbrite.com and at fyi.mica.edu. We'll have a little information later in this conversation, as well as having it up on our website. And Jarvis Tyner, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
So let's talk first about the film a little bit. I mean, and why you are you're part of bringing this to Baltimore, and why is that?
First of all, you know, I had a very short stay in the theaters.
Why am I not surprised?
if you blink, so, you know, you'd miss it. But it is really an outstanding documentary.
Philosophy professor Angela Davis admitted that she is a member of the Communist Party.
Hoover put her on the top 10. Everybody had a file on her.
Her first lecture drew 2,000 students.
Angela's education is now being put into practice.
Angela Davis purchased 4 guns.
There is a conspiracy in the land.
It's a conspiracy to wipe out the black community as a whole.
Well, I think she's trying to overthrow our system of government, and she admits that.
The actions of the FBI in apprehending Angela Davis, a rather remarkable story.
A U.S. District Court judge set bail at $100,000.
That the movement to free all political prisoners is growing every day.
This entire incident was a deliberate provocation.
They wanted to break me. They wanted me to respond.
There was enormous feeling for Angela everywhere in the world.
We know that she is innocent.
We want to tell that Pharaoh and Washington to let Angela Davis go free.
What they're doing to her is an exaggerated form of what happens every day to black people in this country.
Mean to be a criminal in this society.
They are not going to kill her. They're not going to imprison her. We're going to free her. We're going to win her freedom.
To me, I think every American ought to see it. It tells a lot about our history.
Let me stop you there, Jarvis. What do you mean every American should see it? I mean, because, you know, when people hear Angela Davis, there are certain folks who have come out of a certain era or study and know her as a 60s personality who and as a radical revolutionary. But, you know, beyond that, I think that when you say everybody should see it, that doesn't always bring home to everybody.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. This is why I think everybody should see it, because it's a great American story. It's a story about an African-American woman who got a great education, brilliant lady, spoke French, German, Spanish, and has her PhD now. And was a wonderful scholar, philosopher, and so on. Got hired at UCLA, got fired by Ronald Reagan when he was governor, and who got involved in the political prisoner movement. She's not particularly a nationalist, but she worked with those who were nationalists, worked with the Black Panther Party, who were a mixture. I wouldn't call them necessarily nationalists, but they had high national consciousness, as she did, and got involved in the whole political prisoner movement in Southern California. And ultimately, people associated with that movement that she was working with ended up trying to free some political prisoners at San Rafael, who were in a courtroom there, and a shootout ensued. She was nowhere near there. She had nothing to do with it. They had taken guns that she had bought for her own self-protection. California at the time, totally legal, totally acceptable, because she had gotten all kinds of threats from the right, and the Klan, and all kinds of crazy folks. And those people used those guns, and when the police found out, they charged her with being part of it, which she wasn't, and they put her on, she fleed, she ran away, and they put her on the most wanted list and all that. Nixon said she was the most dangerous person in the country, a terrorist and all that. So it was all stops out, everything, nothing was limited in their attack on her. She made the front page of Time magazine. They really wanted everybody to find her, and he didn't, until ultimately she was on her way to turn herself in New York, meet with the party's attorney, remember the time party as well. When she came to New York, we think they knew where she was some time before that, but they eventually arrested her. Big trial, big worldwide trial, worldwide protest, about Angela being innocent and so forth and so on. And it was both against racism and anti-communism and freezing and against male chauvinism and inequality for women and all that. That's all part of the mix. And it went before a jury, an all-white jury in California, San Jose County, San Jose City, I don't know, county, and she was acquitted because she didn't do it.
Now, well, this story, I mean, it's interesting. The woman who made this film is the same woman who made the Shirley Chisholm movie, Unbought and Unbossed. And she chose Angela Davis, who's now clearly still is still out there working and fighting and teaching and doing everything else that she always did. So what do you think, though, the relevance is? This is going to be shown at MICA, the Maryland Institute College of Art.
Right, yeah.
And it's in an academic area. University of Baltimore is near there. This will be broadcast at Morgan State University, and it's going to be Hopkins is just up the road. Why should somebody who was Angela or my or your age back in the 60s, in their 20s and 30s, bother to see this movie? You know what I'm saying? I mean, what is it about, other than the piece of history, why is it relevant? Why is it important?
You and I, if you're old enough to remember the case, you're also old enough to know the degree to which the sort of anti-communist hysteria was still in the country, that people were so fearful to get that label that they just many people were in retreat. But there was this big movement for African-American freedom that also sweeping that area, which also helped to build the Vietnam movement, the women's movement, a whole bunch of other movements. But that movement was actually in defiance of it, and it was really kind of breaking the back of the old McCarthyite anti-communist hysteria, and was gaining a level of unity of black and white. And the truth is that that movement, somebody said that movement, that period there, and the Angela Davis case, and what it forced America to look at and challenge, like the way they tried to really legally lynch her because she was a black woman and a communist and fighting racism, who could have had a wonderful lucrative career in academia, brilliant, brilliant woman, as all of her books and her writing show, could have easily have just slipped back into the shadows, so to speak, of academia, but instead had the heart and the principles and the courage to keep fighting. And when they went after her, it forced a lot of people to look at those issues and to break with it. And that was what was so great about it. And I think that has made this country more democratic and helped to raise the level of the American people. And somebody said it, and I didn't, that it was part of setting the stage to make it possible, ultimately, to elect Barack Obama president, who has also been subjected to some of the same kind of nonsense, you know. So I think it's really important in turn to constructing a higher level of democracy and humanism and even morality among the American people about what is right and wrong and what is inclusive and why our democracy has to be more inclusive and more dedicated towards further levels of freedom and so on, which we continue to fight.
And in that period, I mean, I think that there are things that came out in this movie about the Soledad brothers, about what actually was going on then. I think if you don't have a because it becomes like people who were in the midst of the 60s, people start telling you stories about the 30s. You know, it's history. You know what I'm saying? Some people got interested, some people did not, in what that history was about. But this particular piece was a very critical moment. It was, this movie's about Angela Davis, but it's also about what happened to the Soledad brothers. In that period, what happened to George Jackson and his brother, Jonathan Jackson, and the other two men who were part of the Soledad brothers. I mean, talk a bit about what comes out of this for the viewers. I mean, it's a pretty compelling movie in terms of the not just the dialogue, not just the interviews with Angela Davis and all the people around her and commentators, but also kind of the visual images that came popping out about this period.
Well, having lived through it, to me, to see it again, it has an amazing impact on me. And I think other people who have lived through that period, they know something about it. And then the young people, who I would say have not experienced the harshness of that period, what was going on in the prison system then, it's really still going on. California still has an apartheid prison system, which is marked by brutality. Not just California, but in California, it's particularly brutal.
State prison,
yeah. And they were demanding democratic rights, and they ended up to the guards suppressing them in various forms of torture and solitary and just open racism of the prison system then. We're still fighting that, and in some ways it's even greater because I know a lot of the students at school we're going to be speaking at, I know a lot of them have been doing some work around decriminalization and the prison industrial complex and so forth. Because Angela, in the Solidarity Brothers case, which is Andrew, which was the case that Angela was supporting with George Jackson and so forth, that case personified or was the focus of thousands of people across the country working on behalf, and it was to humanize a dehumanized system inside the prison. We're still fighting that battle today. So when Angela associated with it and got involved in it, she immediately rose in the leadership of this thing. She was also already a member of the Che Lumumba Club of the Communist Party in Southern California, which was predominantly black and Latino club of the Communist Party. It wasn't all black, it was predominantly black and Latino club in Southern California, in the L.A. area. And this was one of her projects that she was working on while teaching at the University UCLA. When there was a protest in the prison and a strike in the prison, and you'll see in the film, how it's dramatized, it's accurate, there was a murder of George Jackson. He was shot down cold blood. And literally, he had his hands in the air, and he was surrendering, you might say, and they had no weapons and so forth, and they shot down in the prison. And Angela and George, the documentary will show, were more than comrades in struggle. They were more than brothers and sisters fighting. They had a affection for each other. They had, letters back and forth and so on. It's quite a beautiful kind of romance going on there. Well, anyway.
That's a part of it that's kind of interesting. There was a level of that to it as well.
Yeah.
What did it mean for you? What did it mean for Angela Davis to join the Communist Party in the 1960s? Why?
Well, you should know that time Angela joined, I think it was the late 60s.
Right.
The civil rights movement had reached its peak. The Panther Party had reached its peak. And there was a kind of period of lull, and there was a searching going on for higher forms of struggle. Now, this world had been shaped by the first socialist country, the Soviet Union, achieving its revolution with all of its strengths and weaknesses. And then after the Second World War, all these countries that went socialist, and Cuba went socialist, and then there was a whole movement in Africa to move in a socialist direction. Now, what people call socialist in some place may not have been the same they called in another, and so forth, but there was this international movement worldwide that's moving in that direction, and a lot of people who are fighting for freedom here in the United States, I think, were influenced by that. And Angela was quite a scholar, and she worked under Herbert Marcuse, professor, and when she was at Brandeis.
And also in Germany, right, as well?
And then she went to Germany as well, yeah, and got her and did her advanced study there. And she was very much a Marxist and wanted to get involved. And when she met Kendra and Franklin Alexander, this couple, African-American couple whose roots go deep into the party, been for a long time, good friends of mine, and so on. And Charlene Mitchell, who was Franklin's sister, she found a place where she could, fight from the perspective, a black perspective, but fight for a socialist transformation of society and so forth, and the Communist Party opened it up for that. In addition, the party has always, going back to its founding in the late 1900s and in the 1920s and 30s, always had a black, white, brown, Latino, Native American, multiracial membership, and had done some pioneering work in practical struggle and in theoretical work on the issue of the national question and national oppression in the United States. And Angela, she explored all of that. And, she probably had questions and so forth, but she was very, very ready to participate in the party. And she saw this club in L.A. You know, she grew up on in Dynamite Hill in Birmingham, Alabama.
Right.
Her family is from their father on the gas station down. It was like a middle-class area, and the Klan enjoyed going into the middle-class area, especially when the civil rights movement started moving in Birmingham and blowing up the houses of some of the prominent people. So a lot of her friends, her father wasn't particularly political. Her mother is quite another matter, though she's quite political, I think. But her father wasn't a businessman, so forth. I don't think their homes ever were blown up, but there were homes all around completely blown up by the Klan. And so she knew Klan, that the terrorism and the fascist nature of the Southern Jim Crow system and the people who advocated it and what they were capable of. She came out of that. She was able to get a scholarship to the Little Red Schoolhouse in Greenwich Village here in New York, and from there on to a college, a career, a distinguishing college career. But in her heart, she wanted to fight for it. She wanted to make a difference. She wanted to fight for change. So that all kind of came together in California for her.
And your relationship has sustained over the years as friends. And
yes. Yeah, she's my bud. And, you know, I love her contribution to this movement, and that comrade is always great. You know, she's not a member of the Communist Party these days, but she never makes an issue of it, and she has come and spoken in our public events here in New York and elsewhere around the country, and she has never been, I would say, angry or bitter towards us. She feels that what she wants to do, she's better done outside, but
right.
Not anti-communist.
And I think it's also interesting as a sidebar when you said that. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of really good people in this country who have remained committed to ideals of a better society, who have passed through many communist parties in America. She being one
That's
of
right.
them.
That's right.
I mean, literally in the hundreds of thousands in this country.
Yeah, in my position, and I tell people in the party all the time, my position is they're friends. Let's treat them like friends and work with them. And you know what? Most of them are happy to continue to work with. But then there's also thousands of people who stayed in the party and
right.
continue to participate in our activities as well.
So you'll be down here tonight with this film, and you didn't help make the film, but this is something that you wanted to do to bring the film here to Baltimore. Was this your doing?
Well, it's actually co-sponsored by, I think, the Humanities Department.
At the Maryland Institute.
Yeah. And also by the People's World, which is a newspaper of the Communist Party. The online newspaper. That, and it's a way of they're raising money, but they also spreading the word through this film. I had written an article in the People's World about a review of the film, which I was really moved by. You know, there are very few documentaries where you say, I actually didn't disagree with anything in it, pretty much. I thought it was pretty good. And I said, no. It's,
yeah.
You know how it is out there. I thought, but you know why? Because it told the truth. It really told the truth. And I have a little bit of a cameo in there, but that's not why I like the film.
You sure, man? You sure that's not what it is?
I'm honest, honest. It is. It is. I didn't even recognize myself. I'm sitting there watching it, and my wife goes, boom, goes to the elbow. That's you. I didn't even see it. It was up there for a few seconds. The second time I looked, it was me. Yeah, so I was in.
That's very funny.
Yeah. But it was great. It's a great documentary. No, woman who did it, she's tremendous.
No, the woman who did it was amazing. I mean, I think and the people who appear in this documentary who knew Angela from growing up, like the all the folks that are interviewed in this film, from Margaret Burnham who grew up with her to Stephen Shames to the journalist Lowell Bergman and many others. I think that, and the former FBI agent, who was one of the men who was looking for Angela Davis. Robert McCartan is one of the people in this film as well. I was interested to know that in the film, it said that Bettina Apfecker, who is the daughter of Herbert Apfecker, I would imagine.
Right.
Who was a communist and one of our great historians ever.
Mm-hmm.
And they said in the subtitle was, they were childhood friends?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. I think, I'm trying to think, how did they know each other? I'm trying to think. Was it at Little Red? I think it was at Little Red, because Bettina's from New York, even though she ended up settling. Yeah, it was probably at Little Red Schoolhouse. A lot of the kids there were left-wing families and so on, although it was just known as a liberal bastion of a school, and it's some experiment. experimental stuff on education. So it was a good school to get into if you could get into it. So I think Patina knew her then, and Margaret knew her then too, I think. Margaret comes from a progressive background as well.
So I wonder for you, and you know, when people watch this film, clearly there's a – this is about – when there's a line that Angela Davis uses in the movie where she says, we thought the revolution was coming tomorrow morning, or tomorrow was around the corner, something like that. And a lot of people in the 60s did believe that.
Yep. 32.
Right.
Some people decided – all right, we'll get married, but we're not going to have kids after the revolution, which won't be long.
You're right. And they remain childless to this day. So,
that's right.
But I'm curious what – and the movie is about a revolutionary movement, about the Panthers, about Angela Davis, right. About the movement to stop the war in Vietnam, about the movement of black liberation that really set the groundwork in America – a post civil rights movement in terms of the defining what kind of America we want. And I think that the roots of all the modern movements you can see are in this film and come out of that era in many ways. So I'm wondering what you think the relevance of all that is for now. I mean, what does it mean to say I'm a revolutionary? What does it mean for you or Angela Davis to use those words? Or what does it mean to say I'm a communist or that I have – or even though Angela – maybe she might still say that, even though she's not a member of the party. What does that mean?
I think when you say that and when you can explain what it is, it takes away a tremendous weapon of those who would like to roll back democracy, roll back all the gains of the 60s, the 30s even, and bring us back to a place where you're going to have a nation of vast poverty, which we actually kind of have now. Vast numbers of people living in poverty, and the top 1-5% living with unlimited wealth and control of our lives. And that's not a democracy. It can't be a democracy under the circumstances. And I ally with elected officials, including the president, when he says things like that and fights with me. He doesn't always do it, but when he does it, I align with it. I think that's really important for our country. So, but when we say we are this, we are communists, that we believe in revolutionary change or foundational change or transformational change in society, meaning this. Racism requires, the answer to racism is a society of full equality, a society where race, as Dr. King talked about, not that color disappears, not colorblind, but can be quite conscious of color to make sure that justice is done to all colors. But a society where we don't have vast bastions of poverty concentrated in among people of color, and where we have 2.2 million people in prison, and 70% of them are African-American men, and 1 in 9 African-American men are in the prison system somewhere. That's not an accident. And clearly, there's nothing biologically, emotionally, character-wise wrong with people of color, wrong with African Americans, that would make us misbehave and so forth in the prison. We were criminalized. We were entrapped with the drugs, entrapped with poverty. The bottom line in defeating crime and bringing this a more peaceful and equal is equality for all. And poverty, get no austerity, but poverty, to wipe out poverty among our people and to make it possible for people to live a fulfilling and happy life. You know, that's what we have to do. So people who think along revolutionary and transformational lines are embracing those bigger concepts and therefore working today to set the stage and to help to bring about those kind of profound, more profound changes tomorrow. And we think socialism is the way to go. But other people have different ideas. But the main thing on the issues, there is a broad agreement about full employment, broad agreement about racial and gender equality, broad agreement about the environment, broad agreement about women's equality. You know, come on, this and what stops us from implementing? What stops us from implementing the powerful, tiny minority at the top with the coin and without the courage and the love for this country and our people to do the right thing? They only see their profits and their wealth, and that's it. If they're rich, everybody else step aside because we made it and we're going to enjoy it, and we deserve it, and you don't because you didn't get it. You know, that kind of stupidity. But that's what dominates our economic and social life. So people are talking like, we want to change that.
We're talking with Jarvis Tyner. And Jarvis Tyner is vice chair, of the Communist Party USA, longtime member of their national board. He's founding member of the Black Radical Congress, friend and comrade of Angela Davis. He's bringing to town this incredible documentary. And I do say incredible. I mean, watching this documentary, if you live through the 60s, you'll feel it and understand it. If you're younger than that and have not lived through this, seeing this movie will just really, it is emotionally amazing and full of facts, and also it draws you into that period. You'll get a sense, visually, intellectually, of what that meant to be at that moment, at that time, around Angela Davis, the Black Panther Party, about all the kind of movements that were taking place at that moment. Visually, intellectually, you'll be there with this film. Free Angela and All Political Prisoners, which will he'll be introducing, Jarvis will be introducing, tonight, November 14th, at MICA. The event starts at 7 p.m. in the Graduate Studio Center, 131 West North Avenue in Baltimore. Just show up at the door for tickets or student passes. And for more information, call 443-604-2298. All that information will also be on our website at steinershow.org. I encourage you to see this movie. It's just amazingly done, and will put you in a place you haven't been before. And Jarvis Tyner, I look forward to seeing you in Baltimore, and thank you so much for this time.
Thank you, Mark.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. To hear the show again and podcast any of our past shows, and find out information about our guests, the work they do, what they've been writing, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.